You know, it was a really good idea to do the podcast in the paddling pool.
Yeah, so refreshing.
Did we have to be naked?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Has anyone seen my rubber duck?
Oh, I'll go and get it from the freezer for you.
No, Scott, cover your nipples up, man.
No!
Oh, my God.
What's that?
It turned into a jacuzzi.
Fighting it off.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Ooh. I thought it was an eel.
That was me.
Sorry. Let's get on with the recording.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the latest Staggering Stories podcast, number 475. Yes, 18 years ago, give or take now several weeks, I think, the first ever episode went out.
We can vote!
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday
to us. We can drink.
Happy birthday to us.
Especially in America, of course.
Well, yes. You know, the paddling pool has made this sofa absolutely sodden.
It was a good old idea.
I did offer you a towel.
The naked bit wasn't my idea.
Without further ado,
yes.
Let us get on to Doctor Who News with El Presidente.
Doctor Who : November gets booked. Ooh. Things are a little quiet in the land of TV Doctor Who, what with RTD2 creating a new series for Channel 4 called Tiptoe, and also stepping back from his regular Doctor Who magazine column. Whilst we wait news on the main series, perhaps after the War Between the Land and the Sea spin-off goes out now, the tie-in merchandise continues as it ever did, even during the first Wilderness years.
This is second.
We now have confirmation of a new hardback Doctor Who book featuring Shuti Gatwa's 15th Doctor and Varada Setu's Belinda Chandra, called The Moon Cruise, but not expected to feature the characters exposing their bottoms. It will be out on the 13th of November and is being written by Esme Jikiemi Pearson, who previously novelised The Church on Ruby Road. The blurb goes something like this. The TARDIS lands on board a luxury space liner owned by the interstellar shipping magnate Marilyn Moon. But there is a sinister side to life on board. What is the secret of the smiling blonde-haired mannequins? What happened to the cruise ship workers when they go off shift? The Doctor soon learns that not all prisons come with bars on the windows, while Belinda faces one of the greatest cruelties in the universe. A zero-pay contract in retail and hospitality that can never be broken.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm just going to say one thing.
Moonites.
Moonites. Moona.
Moona. Doctor Who, more moon action, this time with vinyl.
Sticky.
It's the vinyl countdown. I'm sorry.
Demon Records have been releasing classic Doctor Who audio tracks with linking narration for some years now. They have now announced their next in the line, Patrick Troughton's four-part 1967 story, The Moonbase.
Yay!
Troughton's full story will come as two LPs and feature Fraser Hines' linking voiceover. This story marks the first return of the Cyberman and the first of their many redesigns. It can be pre-ordered now for a very reasonable sum of £32 sterling and will be released on the 19th of September 2025.
I'd like pointed out for the record that in the early 80s, when I bought my first album, and it was the Human League things with eyeliner that no sane person would ever dream of doing, it cost me £4. I was going to say four shiny pounds, but back then they were papery pounds, and it cost me four of them. Shut up.
Yeah, vinyl's kind of treated as a special edition now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, effectively. Yeah.
Is this the same release as they did a couple of years back on CD and as used to be cassette?
Effectively, yeah. These are the missing stories they did on CD. Yeah. Pressed on vinyl for your vinyl pleasure.
Oh, I've got my hand in the paddling pool.
Come back to us, Karen.
Oh, no.
Well, while she's gone, anyway.
You know what happens when you put your hand in a bucket of water. Yes.
Can you hear us out there? More Doctor Who news.
Ooh.
Purvis for free.
That's what I've heard.
To mark the 60th anniversary of Peter John Purvis's introduction to Doctor Who viewers as the first Doctor companion, Stephen Taylor, those audio mongers in chief, Big Finish, have released two short audiobook stories for free. Both of these two short trips are read by Purvis and written by Jacqueline Rayner. Collectively, they go by the punny title of A Feast of Stephen and comprise stories A Forest for All Seasons and The Doctor's Gambit. Talking about it, Purvis said, "It's always a pleasure to be able to get into a recording studio and do some Big Finish recordings."
Not in this temperature, it's not.
Yeah. "It's now 60 years, almost to the day, that I first appeared in Doctor Who, and 60 years is a very long time. I like both of these short trips. It was an extremely generous idea of Jacqueline when she wrote it to explore Stephen's romantic side."
Ooh.
"It's an aspect of Stephen that hasn't really been shown before." "Besides the first Doctor, one story features Vicky and the other Dodo." We can't have enough Dodo. "You'll have to listen to find out if any of those three count towards Stephen's romantic conquests. Available for free now."
Can I just point out, wasn't Peter Purves, yes, was someone before he was Stephen, wasn't he?
Yeah, was it Mortondale.
Mortondale.
On top of the Empire State Building.
But it was much the same story, wasn't it?
It was the master plan, the 12-episode epic.
The Chase.
Yeah.
Or was it The Chase?
It was The Chase, yeah.
Sorry, it was The Chase.
Okay, so just for accuracy's sake.
Yeah, he played a comedy character, then an action-adventure character called Stephen Taylor.
Showing off his full range.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, didn't he have a god-awful American accent?
He did,
I mean, a caricature. Perfectly adequate American accent. Sorry, American chums. Do we have any addendums?
I have an addendum.
Oh, yes.
I have an addendum. Though this addendum is now relatively old, because it popped up when
a bit like him.
Thank you.
Sorry.
It popped up when we just finished recording our last podcast.
Okay.
Because I got home and suddenly it was there on my tablet. So a little bit old now. But Harris Yulin.
Dead. Okay.
I hope I pronounced that name correctly. No, he's a jobbing actor. If you knew him, or if you saw him, you'd not recognise him. He's been in such things as Cagney and Lacey, Kojak, Columbo. But he popped up on my particular frame because he was the judge from Ghostbusters 2.
Right, yes. Oh,
and more specifically, he was the traumatised Cardassian, Eamon Maritza, from Duet, from DS9.
Oh, I'm not sure I've seen that one.
The reason it's significant is because it's where DS9 actually ups its game. Before that, it's sort of silly little first season episodes with no real consequence. But this one had dramatic weight from both Kieran Norris.
I was going to say, this was pretty much a double header,
wasn't it? Double header, yeah.
Because he was Kira and him.
Yeah, because he was in prison trying to turn himself in for crimes that somebody else had created.
Yeah. Oh, I must and have it was, seen that. It was fairly quite, early.
Yeah, it was towards the end of the first season.
Okay, that
would have it showed what possibilities DS9 could have had.
Yeah.
And fortunately, to a large extent, they pushed it further in later seasons down that route.
Having seen what B5 was doing.
Having seen what B5 was doing. But yeah, it's the first of a turnaround. I have another addendum, if I can find it. I don't know if we've mentioned this last time, but the Ace books...
Right.
They are now out, or they are being released rapidly soon. It's going to be two books.
Two books, okay.
Yeah, called Ace's Jacket, The Inside Story.
Okay.
And Ace's Jacket, The Outside Story.
Right.
They're not adventures, are they? They're behind-the-scenes things,
aren't they? It's a combination of behind-the-scenes things, but also she's got a lot of people to write bits and pieces. She's got Peter Davison, Jodie Whittaker.
No.
It's a whole load of people
okay.
from behind the scenes. And she's doing it with Sean Levy. Not the one who directed Deadpool and Wolverine. it's another Sean Levy.
Yeah, because she had some Ace books out, I think, in the early 90s, didn't she?
I think I've got them up there somewhere.
Ooh, yeah, okay. Yeah. I went off to various Doctor Who alumni, like David Tennant, Chris Chibnall, and I said to them, could you write a story about one of the badges that takes your interest?
Okay.
And she's Aldred told the BBC, they've written little short stories or poems. I've had paintings, we've had cartoons, we've had all sorts. So we have contributions from Peter Davison, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Peter Capaldi and Jodie Whittaker. Amongst others.
Peter Capaldi, eh?
Yes.
He was at Glastonbury. Yeah.
Yeah. With Shooty. Not in the same set, but Mr. Gatwa was at Glastonbury as well.
Right. There's often a couple of doctors there.
Yeah.
Tennant likes to go along, and I think Matt Smith, he's big on stage. I think he goes along anyway.
Of Tennant, Matt Smith.
Yeah.
The book sales will go to Autism All-Stars and the National Autistic Society.
Excellent.
Okay, I'll have to pick up a copy of each of those.
My last addendum.
Ooh, he's got another one.
My last and final addendum. As you know, IDW is a comic book corporation that produces comics.
Indeed.
Like they do.
Yeah, they've produced quite a few comic books.
They're still doing Ghostbusters?
I don't know. But they currently hold the license for Star Trek.
Okay.
And they are producing a short-run series called The Last Starship, which is set after the burn from season 3 Discovery.
Okay, yeah.
Not the resolution, so it's before season 3, but after it's happened.
Yeah.
And will feature a resurrected James Kirk.
Yay!
Right, okay.
Cannot have enough resurrected James Kirks.
Yeah. So he's there sort of trying to pull things together before the burn or after the burn.
Is this co-written by him by any chance?
I don't know. Just having a quick flick.
Is there a supporting album?
Oh, please, no. He's been mysteriously resurrected. Dun, dun, dun. And the story is written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing. Not names I recognise, but apparently they did the IDW's Eisner-nominated Star Trek series, which launched in 2022. Okay. So we'll see what happens. Watch this space.
Mm. And that's the end of the news.
I am now out of addendums.
Right, we've all been tuning into Disney Plus to watch Andor.
Star Wars story.
Now, I watched the first series. Go on, then.
I would like to point out that physical violence was almost done to my body a couple of times during while watching this.
Okay.
First season of Andor, I really enjoyed. Fantastic. Second season of Andor was possibly the best piece of television I've seen in a long, long time.
Yes.
And he'd watched it before me. And
I towards, kept quiet.
Towards the end, I got quite involved with the characters, and he was the closest by to take it out on. I may have tutted in his direction several times.
You threatened that I had to sleep downstairs a couple of times because I got you hooked on
it. I believed it was in the shed with the spider.
Yes, it was.
So, of course, Andor centres around Cassian Andor, one of the heroes of the film Rogue One.
Yes, a prequel to Rogue One because he comes to a sticky end in Rogue One.
I was going to say, so you should have known better than to get attached.
Yeah.
Because you know what's going to happen to him.
I was really impressed by the way they built up to Rogue One.
Yeah.
Building to that one point.
Certainly during the latter part of the second season, you can see the jigsaw puzzles slotting into place.
And in season one, you get a lot of characters who seem to have no interaction at all.
Yeah.
You've got Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
Who doesn't actually meet Andor until very near the end of the second season.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we followed her story through.
Yeah.
You found out how she ended up with the rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, basically in charge of it.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for him, she would be dead.
She would be, lobotomized.
Very, very, very dead.
Lobotomized in a cell somewhere.
You had the waif from Game of Thrones shacked up with Belinda from Doctor Who.
Yes, yeah.
Who, spoiler music, shalalala, also came to a sticky end.
She did.
Yeah. I did wonder if that was because of it's good for the plot or just because she was off doing Doctor Who.
I think it was a plot thing because Let me remember what her bloody name is. I can't keep calling Cinta. Her away. No, not her.
Oh, Vanda.
Vel Sartha.
Right.
Because after Cinta died, Vel is a much harder person.
Yeah, she's closed off.
Yeah.
Very closed off. Except for maybe right at the end where she shares a drink with Andor, commemorating all the people they've lost.
Yes.
That was a good drink.
That's the only point you see any real emotion from her after Cinta goes.
So they're all part of the separate, disparate rebel cells.
Yeah.
So Luthen Rael is the one who's basically in charge of...
Luthen, I would call him sort of more a spy master pulling the strings.
Yes, yeah.
He's sort of...
Excellent character.
Oh, yeah.
Stellan Skarsgård, isn't it?
Yeah. And I've got to say, between the both of them, Luthen and Clear, I'm not too sure who was in charge.
Because
they did keep swapping,
you know.
They were a very good team.
Yeah.
Very
but
good team.
Each time, the other one seemed to have the level head.
The scene where she had to pull the plug on him.
Yeah.
That was so wonderful.
Spoiler music.
Yeah. Everything's spoiler. We're spoiling everything.
Spoiling it for me. I'm a bad fan. I didn't get to watch it because both people in our household cancelled their Disney subscriptions simultaneously, but didn't tell me when I was trying to log on.
You should have said you can.
I'm quite happy to watch it again. You're more than welcome around.
So I don't mind spoiling, but the best thing you've seen in a long time means that I definitely have to watch it. Partly because Rogue One was my favourite modern Star Wars film from Disney.
This is it. I remember back in the day when I was trying to explain Rogue One to someone. If A New Hope is the Dam Busters, Rogue One is Platoon.
Yeah, very much.
Don't you remember Rogue One? I turned up at your house thinking we had some sort of games night.
Yeah.
And you politely let me watch Rogue One with rum and cheese and things like that.
Yeah.
And I have to ask, is there any appearance of Peter Cushing in there like they did with the film?
No. He's mentioned.
Oh, good.
Tarkin's mentioned a few times.
It's something I've noticed, what with this and the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
This introduces Director Krennic, basically. So you have Dendra as the main villain, who introduces Director Krennic as the next villain. Rogue One has Director Krennic as the villain, which introduces Grand Moff Tarkin as the next villain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
New Hope, Grand Moff Tarkin with Vader as the next villain. Empire, Vader is the main villain, which introduces Palpatine.
Yeah, it builds up. Yeah. Yes, they're very restrained in this. They don't show you Tarkin necessarily. They don't show you the Emperor.
No.
You don't see Darth Vader.
No.
In fact, you
only see the Death Star partially built right at the end.
It's the last scene with Krennic in.
You see bits of it being built.
Which you assume is bits of
the whole prison bits cycle. Yeah. What they're building, it's very cleverly done.
It literally is like watching someone make a screw.
Yes.
But Denise Goff, who played Dedra, kudos. She is fantastic.
I do feel sorry for the actress because she must be hated.
Oh, she was so good. And she started off just, she's a baddie. Mm. But by the end, especially after, what was his name? Oh, her lovey squeezy.
Cyril.
After Cyril died, she just... the dark side had its grips on her strong.
Yeah.
And also, Cyril, through the first season, I would say Cyril is like Rimmer, but with less humour.
He's very much drank the Kool-Aid, hasn't he?
Yeah. Rimmer is self-aware. He knows what he is.
Cyril doesn't.
Yeah.
But the whole thing with Cyril, this is another spoiler, he is dead set on catching Andor.
Andor is his nemesis.
He's going to track him down, come hell or high water.
Yeah.
And he's got him. Series 2, halfway through, he's got him. There's a big riot going on. He's got Andor in a bar. Brilliant fight scene.
It was.
And he's going to blow his brains out. And just as Andor looks at him and says, "Who are you?" The look of just abject despair that his nemesis didn't know who he is just before he has his own brains blown out was...
Yeah.
So his entire life was tracking down this guy who didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
Didn't know he existed.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. You have the different groups of people like Cyril and Dedra who are so for the Empire. They really buy into that new order.
Yeah.
Keep control of the galaxy. You see them suddenly fall apart as the series goes on.
Well,
as more and more disorganised. The people with actual brains, like Dedra, the director.
The guy from Game of Thrones.
Endeavour and everything.
Supervisor. Partagaz.
Yeah.
Supervisor Legret?
No, Partagaz. Okay. Anton Lesser.
Oh, here we go. Anton Lesser.
Yeah. These are really capable people.
They're in control.
And they just get wiped out by the end.
Well, so events run away from them.
Yeah.
For no fault of their own.
So the Empire is losing that competence.
Yeah.
And then you see the rebellion, who start off, particularly the beginning of the second season, completely at each other's throats.
That group on Yavin to begin with.
Yeah. That, and also you've got Forrest Whitaker's character.
Yeah.
He was good, wasn't he? Oh, my God, man. Yeah. Wild man of the West.
Yeah.
Completely mad. Yeah. But they all, by the end of it, they're starting to come together and build a proper collective.
You watch them learn. You recognise the HQ.
Yeah.
It starts to look like the HQ from A New Hope.
Yeah.
And you've got young people on various pieces of equipment, and one of them calls one of the leaders over and says, well, this has happened. He goes, right, you know the routine. What we do is you send two up and have two in reserve. And they're learning what to do.
But also, sort of turning back to Sewell,
Certainly
through the beginning of it and the first half of season two, he is an Imperial man. He's doing it for the good of the Empire, because the Empire is security, is safe, does not break the law, everything right. Right up until
the massacre
at Gorman. Yes. Yeah. And that just pulls the curtains away from his eyes, and literally it breaks him. He gets distracted by Andor, and we know what happens after that. Yeah. But up until that point,
because he went back in with the people who were being massacred, he was so broken by the realization that he was on the wrong side that he went back into the massacre to see if they would kill him, and then he got, like you said, distracted by Andor.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Which is understandable. He's a very good-looking man.
Now.
Well, we've got to talk about Andor, Diego Luna.
Yeah.
Very final episode. I knew it was the final episode. This is where I got very cross with him.
Yeah.
Because you saw him getting ready to go on his next mission, and he put on the Rogue One coat.
Yeah. Because the next mission is to the moons, the rings of...
Caffrine or whatever.
With Erso.
Which is where Rogue One starts.
Yes, yeah. It's literally hours later after he finishes.
Yeah, he gets on his ship and flies off, and we'll meet Jyn Erso in the next few hours.
We also get, especially in the second season, we get a set of time breaks. It jumps forwards by a couple of years. And what I liked is you had the sound of the anvil.
Yes.
From Ferrix. And then it's suddenly you get BB3 or BB2, which stands for Before the Battle of Yavin. So it's 2 years before the Battle of Yavin and 1 year before the Battle of Yavin.
Yeah. Andor was shacked up with Bix.
Bix.
Yes, season two.
Yep, she is another one who was absolutely wonderful.
Oh, God, yeah.
She came a cropper. She made it to the end, but she came a cropper with the Empire's version of Dr. Mengele.
Yeah.
Who, instead of torturing her with pokers and knives and things, got into her head, put a head,
sound wave,
sound wave through her brain that gradually drove her mad.
And she certainly suffers from PTSD.
Definitely.
Hits rock bottom at a few points.
Some of the episodes, I'm thinking of saying to you, does she kill herself? Because it looked like she was going to at times.
Mm.
But she didn't.
She made it out.
She was strong.
She got her revenge.
Yeah. Oh, did she ever?
Yeah.
I found out since, because I've read show notes and whatever, there is deliberate question marks, the deliberate things left open. Like the reason why Andor got into the rebellion or kicked the whole thing off to begin with is because he was looking for his sister.
Yes. Mm.
He never actually finds his sister, but it gives him motivation to help save other people.
Mm. I think we knew from the beginning that he was never going to find her. There was no one else left alive.
Yeah.
And a small girl of about 9 years old was never going to make it on her own.
Oh, no. And, what was his name? The supervisor in the prison. The one that couldn't swim. Andy Serkis.
Yeah. Kino Loy.
Thank you.
There was talk of him maybe turning up in season two, but they thought, no, perfect ending was leaving where he was.
Yeah.
Mm. If you do anything after that, it just diminishes.
Yeah.
And he probably got to deal with Dedra.
Possibly, if it's the same prison, if he's still in there.
Yeah. But we did have one of them show up, though, didn't we?
Yes. One of the imprisoned people broke out with him.
Yes.
Because he's in Rogue One.
Melshi is in Rogue One, yes. Yeah. So, he ends up being a friend.
Complete with the gun that he took off
the guard.
the the ESPA, that Andar took off the ESPA corporate police.
Yeah.
Right at the beginning, the first episode.
I think the same gun that's, he has in Rogue
that
One.
That is another thing, the corporate police, the corporate sector, that is lifted from the role-playing game, from the West End role-playing
game. Well, originally it started in it's Han Solo at Star's End. Yeah. That was all corporate sector.
Yeah, but the look of them.
Yeah.
The description of them, the look
and
of
the
them.
And the ISB, I think, started
ISB
in the...
ISB definitely is from
that
the
was,
from the West
source
End.
Book.
Yeah, from the West End games. Yeah.
So much has come from that.
Oh, yeah. So it's just followed straight through. Yeah.
But the storytelling in this was out of this world. And everywhere you went, no matter whatever scene you were in, there were characters that you cared about and who had their own amazing stories.
Yeah.
I mean, silly things like the fact that Bail Organa was there and no mention of his daughter.
No, no.
But I really did enjoy following Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
You notice her whole... idiot of a husband didn't wait too long to...
yeah, the last shot of
to
him.
To shack up with someone up else somebody. When she was gone.
Was it actually, was the...
Perrin.
The banker's wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that who she was?
Yeah. You remember the contact that they made? Yeah.
He was a waste of space.
Yeah, that, but apparently, word of God, Tony Gilroy, who wrote it, he was aware of what Mon Mothma was doing.
He just didn't turn
her in. He kept it. You know, he didn't ever talk to her about it. He didn't ever mention it to anybody.
Just pretend he didn't know.
Pretended he didn't know, for his own safety, probably more than anything else.
Yeah.
You can imagine, after she vanished from the Senate, after that speech, he would have been arrested immediately. But somehow he wasn't.
He would have had plausible deniability.
Yeah, knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
I also like the little tips to the past with the various actors who appear in Rogue One crop up, certainly in the second season.
Yes, Judy Anderson from Sherlock.
And I am glad that they got Alan Tudyak back for KX.
Oh, the droid.
He's only in
the last two
couple episodes.
Yeah. Last two episodes.
But when they bring him back, when they reactivate him, and they're all there with their guns just in case he's still what he was. If I've offended you, I apologise. If I haven't, please get that gun out of my face.
The line I like best of all is when they go on an unsolicited mission. When they go back to Yavin, they're coasted down with two X-Wings because they can't trust anything. And he just turns around and says, I plan to say you kidnapped me.
They were breaking rules.
Yeah. He gets a great corridor scene.
There's a wonderful meme I've seen. You have Gungans shields, and they got the holding the little electronic shield, and you have Jedi shields, and they're there with the lightsabers. Yeah. You have Droidica shields. And then you have KX3 shield, and he's holding the bloke.
Yeah. Holding an Imperial, yes.
Yeah, holding an Imperial.
Yeah, the one who was after Dedra's job, wasn't it?
Yes,
This is another example of how good the acting was. Several of the Imperials, I really wanted to physically slap them for the smirks.
Yeah.
It was just gentle smirk. The sort of smirks you used to see on a bully in the playground at school when they'd made you cry.
That commander on the grain planet.
Oh, God, yes.
Oh, yeah, God.
You almost hit me.
Oh, well, jeez.
She
dealt with him, though, didn't she?
She did. She did. Yeah. It's the people who don't make it to the end.
Yeah, surprising number two, though, considering that most of these characters we never see again in Star Wars.
I admit.
Mon Mothra aside, of course.
Yeah, but you had Andor's adopted mother, and I can't remember the name of him, but the big guy who was on Ferrix who got off with them.
Russo.
Yeah.
Russo.
Yeah, so they fall by the wayside because they get taken out, literally. Mm. You invest in these people because, as you said, they're three-dimensional.
Yeah.
And then they're gone.
Yeah. Is it the strongest of the Disney spin-off series that they've done?
I think so.
Yeah. It's slower burn than something like Mandalorian.
It doesn't really kick in to about the first season. Doesn't kick in to about the fourth episode.
Mm. But they're not dull, the first three. They're just laying the groundwork and you're getting to know these characters.
Yeah.
And then it just goes...
Likewise, the beginning of season two... It's slow because you have all that stuff for the wedding with Mon Mothma.
Yeah.
It's fascinating because all the interplay with Luthen being there and you have some Imperials turning up.
You got Luthen, as you see him, he's a hard-nosed, cold, for necessity, rebel. But his persona as the antiques dealer is a fop. It's perfect Pimpernel, Scarlet Pimpernel.
I love that scene where Dedra confronts him.
Oh,
and they both keep that pretense. Yeah.
There's only two genuine things in this.
Well, there's only two things in this foyer that is of dubious provenance.
Yeah.
And he is talking about himself and Dedra.
Yeah. He was so much calmer in Mamma Mia.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He really was.
A lot more singing as well.
Yeah, but he had a boat.
Yeah.
Shorts.
Oh, open tie. Open
yeah,
shirt.
Open shirt. He was chill. Should have stuck with that. But yeah, he was him and Bix and Dedra and even Cyril were yeah. some of the best characters in the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of really good guests. Even poor little Lonnie, who is the mole inside the ISB that Luthen was running for years.
Yeah.
And the way he dealt with him, so cold.
Yeah, but I think it probably saved his family.
Probably, yes.
Oh, completely. Well, like the scene with the supervisor when they went to go to arrest him at the end.
Yes.
And you knew what he was going to do. You knew he was going to Shawshank it.
Listening to the manifesto that was in season one.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the other guy at least had the decency to say, I'll wait outside. And when you heard the gun go, the stormtroopers move, and he just made a gesture with his hand and just took a moment before they went in and got a mop. It's cracking. Now we've totally spoiled it for everyone. Yeah. We know we've spoiled
it.
There's
so much more. We haven't even spoken about the massacre of the Gorman, really. I mean, that was...
The spiders.
Yeah. Very blatantly French resistance.
Oh, God, down to the language. The language wasn't... It had bits of French in there, but you had the look of them, the berets and the
And
the
they were all French actors.
Yeah.
Oh, they were they?
Yeah.
But there's just so much to this series.
Yeah, and it really makes you look at the Empire and think of them as competent. Stormtroopers in this can shoot. Yeah. They can actually hit things. They are real threats.
But I mean, that is down to a New Hope, because they needed to miss so they could get the transporter aboard the Falcon so they could find out where Yavin was. Yeah. Well, people forget that was deliberate.
And perhaps that was a new intake.
Could have been.
Well, that's the thing with the massacre.
Yes.
You had that squadron of kids. They didn't look more than 17 years old, these kids, and their commander had done everything he could to get them trained up and that
and protect
them, and then he's essentially told they're cannon fodder.
Get them out, and what is actually important, it's one of the Imperial snipers shoots the cadets.
To get
the motivation
for a riot, so they can then go, oh, look at what these nasty people did. And then they had the audacity to put out that broadcast about how they made the ultimate sacrifice and they will not be forgotten.
Yeah, the Imperials. And also, again, the propaganda news reporters at Gorman.
Yeah, them all lined up like you do at big events anyway, all just speaking from the same script. I was getting very cross during that episode.
I know.
People have said that they can see parallels with modern.
Completely.
This is written a couple of years ago.
This is it. The misdirected Death Star plans.
Misdirected?
Yeah, got sent to Dead Run. She wasn't meant to have that.
Oh, yeah. And it's almost like inviting a journalist into a WhatsApp group.
Indeed, yeah.
Right, we've ranted and raved about this. We all loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Except for Scott, who
hasn't
seen it.
He's definitely going to watch it now.
It is a proper masterpiece, it really is.
Yeah.
It's just outstanding. But I know that there's going to be some of you out there who don't agree with us. Why not write to us and tell us why you think we're wrong via show
at
staggeringstories.net. Woohoo. Okay, after the joys that were Andor,
indeed,
we've decided to talk about our hopes, maybe predictions, probably not, for the future of Doctor Who. Pause for music. I had one idea.
Okay, lay
it on us.
It's sort of like in two parts, because you'd have one of these for little children and one of these for adults.
Right.
Basically, they do an AI thing.
Right.
And with the children, you can pick any doctor and any companion and give them a storyline. Just put one line in about what's going to happen and see what the AI does. Children will be brilliant. It'll be the Daleks and the Sontarans fight the Cybermen, and then Nessie from Loch Ness comes along and Godzilla appears, and Sarah Jane and Susan and everyone's together. It'll be fantastic. I've read fan fiction. I know what the adults are going to do with this. So that one would have to be on late at night.
I love that idea. That's definitely something that hasn't been done before, and it's kind of a create-your-own-adventure for children, an interactive way. of getting them into it.
I can certainly see it. We can't be too many years away from being able to do that sort of thing.
Yeah. You'd have someone to sort of police it so that they can choose the best results and, say, like, show a series of 10 stories that essentially will have these kids' names on.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagined by Luca.
So a step up from, like, writing into Blue Peter and designing your own monster.
You exactly. could actually
write into BBC and design your own...
That's young talent.
See, I had a good idea.
That's a brilliant idea.
You didn't say it was a good idea when I told you about it. You did the nose-pinching thing and said, okay...
Well, this was just after we'd finished watching Rogue One, and I was slightly...
Andor.
And I was slightly shocked and disturbed and...
Scared.
Afeared
for my life.
Oh, you were quite right.
You were one
afeared.
Of the people that survived Andor.
Yeah.
I know it's been attempted many times with not quite much success, except for perhaps the Lego Dimensions. I would like a decent computer game.
Right, yeah.
Something
it's a very difficult one.
I know, but something along the sort of more open world. Yeah, you have a story and you have side quests, so it's got to be an open world like Witcher or like Fallout.
Or Star Wars Outlaw.
Or even Star Wars Outlaw. It is possible it's been done, but...
So essentially something that doesn't look like it was borrowed from the 80s.
Yeah.
Problem is, Doctor Who, games are about combat, aren't they, ultimately? Yeah. Mm. Outlaws, whatever, you're out, going out shooting stormtroopers or...
Well, again, it doesn't necessarily have to have the Doctor in it. You can use various icons. I mean, we got time travellers in the Vortex Manipulator, so you've got different time periods in there.
Or it can have the Doctor in it, but you're playing a unit soldier.
Maybe.
Or a Sontaran trooper.
The Kate Stewart game.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Strax.
And it's just when you're having to play the Doctor, then you have clever stuff and sneaky stuff. I'd be rubbish at the sneaking stuff.
Oh, no, you're fairly good at Spider-Man. I've seen you bang lots of heads on girders.
That's only because I can shoot my web at them and pull them up and bang their heads on a girder. It makes such a good sound. The Doctor rarely shoots webs
at
anyone.
I know it's very difficult and I know it's nigh on impossible. I acknowledge that. Ironically, the one that has come as closest to it is... the Doctor Who section in Lego Dimensions.
Yeah, that was very good. Yeah, it's tricky. I do wonder if Doctor Who might actually hold back a game like that. The IP, people will be put off by the fact, the non-Doctor Who fans, the non-sci-fi fans.
Oh, yeah.
It's Doctor Who, I don't want to play Doctor Who game.
I acknowledge all that, and I know this is wistful, distant, in a perfect world thinking. Yeah.
This is the thing. You say, you know, there's been no decent ones. I think the same with Star Trek games. After an initial couple of weeks of being really interested in them, I find these ones that are always based on ships flying around the universe... dull.
Mm. My other half really likes those, and I don't see the appeal.
Yeah.
But I did think Lego was probably the best Doctor Who game so far. I think you had a lot of variation in there, and they really embraced it, didn't they?
Oh, God,
You had sort of character voices in there.
Characters, voices, scenarios. There was one thing that I loved about it. It was when you were the Fourth Doctor, or played the Fourth Doctor Lego figure, you could only access the secondary console room on the fourth day of each month.
Okay.
Yeah. Almost times you walked in there, it was the white console room. Mm-hmm. But if it was on the fourth of whatever month, it was the wooden panel console room.
Okay.
Yeah, they really went into a lot of detail with that on the Lego game, because like every Doctor had their specific console room.
Yeah.
And I think, didn't the Fourth Doctor have K-9 at one point running
around? Right, K-9.
You
could get a little Lego K-9 and have that into the game.
But they really went for it, didn't they?
You kill them all off in... horrific ways.
You could get them to regenerate.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm sure.
One involved acid.
There's a video on YouTube where it goes through the whole lot, I think.
Well, there was also little points, like when you were in the Victorian era, you had Strax, Madame Vashta, and Jenny. But also in the background, every now and again, you had posters from the Regency Theatre of Lee Sing Chang.
Yes, that's right. I remember that. So could a modern game beat that, do you think?
I don't know.
They did so well.
Yeah, it is a perfect world thinking. Yeah. And I acknowledge that it would possibly not happen. And there's got to be a huge dynamic shift. If it was going to happen, it would have been in the 2010s, the first reissue of the new series.
The thing is, these things take years. I mean, look at Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah,
I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Talking of things that probably won't happen, I would really like more character options again.
Oh,
yeah. And I was thinking about the last two seasons in particular. There's not many monsters of the week to pick, is there? You've got the mollusk creature from Dot and Bubble. You've got the Fakazoid things from Lucky Day.
Dugadoo.
You could have a plushy Dugadoo and plushy Lux, maybe with a ripcord that sings his tune. But you definitely could have, like, double packs. So you could have two Ralis, at very least, because we've got three now.
Yeah.
You could have two Toymakers, effectively, because you've got the old and the new.
Yeah.
You could double up on Gods. You could have Lux with Jinx Monsoon.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Omega.
You definitely need a Mel two-pack now, because she's been both old classic and new Who. Mm-hmm.
Useful Mel and previous Mel.
That's it. And previous Mel could come with a Kate O'Mara head.
So you could swap over.
So you've got a third Rani, or it could just be sort of Mel with bike with like the dap old pullback action.
Yeah, Mel with bike for present Mel, and Mel with bubble for the bubble
absolutely,
that she was in.
Yeah. Hamster ball Mel.
It could be like Evel Knievel. You could put the hamster ball in a thing, pull the ripcord, and
it spins round. Yeah, you could do off. That.
It shoots off.
And you could intersperse like the character options with ones we haven't had. So we still need a Cyber Lord release, do we, from the Chibnall era?
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe.
And we haven't got a Paradise Towers cleaner, just saying that.
Did they ever do a Cyber Controller?
They did a Cyber Controller, but it was split among four or five packs. So, like, you'd have a fourth Doctor and an arm.
Okay.
That's
so
right.
You had to build the Cyber Controller. You had to buy about five or six different things to build a Cyber Controller.
Oh, okay.
But when it was like at its height last time, I think a lot of it was sold through Woolworths, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. I remember the last thing before they closed, they had a full size Dalek, so Mum bought it for me.
I mean,
sorry for it.
You got the special B&M releases, but not all B&M stock them.
No, and it depends what you want if people have got to them first. Because I happen to go in a lot of the time. I've booked coincidental holiday, and the shelves are full, so I get full pick. But a lot of time, there's things that you really, really want, and they've just gone.
There was a time when I was collecting the Dalek history because you know, I'm sorry, I love Daleks, and it's all the different variations, but they'd gone.
I've got some of the more recent ones, but they also did like Big Finish specials, didn't they, with their Daleks and their Doctor.
Adam, ideas?
Well, I think about the series itself. Where could that go now? And obviously the dream is for JMS to come in and take over.
Definitely.
But I worry that it's been left in a weird state.
Yeah.
Why?
Whether RTD continues or not, if it's going to a new platform, going to Amazon or wherever, started off with Billy Piper as maybe not the Doctor. It's a really weird place to bring in new viewers in.
Could you ignore it and just bring your Doctor in like Christopher Eccleston?
Yeah, or could they do just a special showing why she's not the Doctor and she's just there to see in the new Doctor?
Could, but then it's a special when you try to bring all new viewers.
But then again, who in the world hasn't heard of Doctor Who? So,
well, I know, a lot of people probably.
Well, they would do a recap, you know.
I think, yes, it could be a weird place to start it. But again, you do like with Christopher Eccleston, just draw a line and start afresh. It's connected, but different.
Yeah, maybe they need to do that, but actually during the season have flashbacks or something which fills in the context. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's tricky.
It's not, as you say, it's not a good place to have left it. When you look back at it,
should have left it not showing who he turned into.
No, exactly. The last thing is just him regenerating into the universe.
That's it. That was when I thought it was going to end, when you suddenly got the long shot of all the regenerationary firing out.
I thought that would have been really
fading
good.
Out, to be continued, whatever. But with Billy Piper, it's not that she's not a good actress. She doesn't feel like a Doctor to me.
I still say she won't be. She's the Moment or she's Rose or, you know.
Just too referential for RTD's first era.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a place to start it for a whole new audience.
It almost feels deliberate on his part, doesn't
it? Yeah. Which I think if JMS, for example, or Toby Whittell, whoever took over,
what
the hell would they do?
Yeah.
Be left in that pickle.
They are both really, really good at what they do, so they would think of something. Yeah. And it amuses me that we can't think of anything, because when they do come up with something, we'll be surprised.
For example, JMS, as we have seen, can write on his feet.
Yeah.
He's lost actors before, so...
Hopefully he'll concentrate on his own series and just write all that, and then go, okay, but how do we get from that RTD stuff to here, and then just suddenly do it after?
Yeah, you may have... His first series. First season of genuine... adventures, which is going on here, and then fill in the backstory. It was something that always troubled me with the RTD, is each season finale has to be bigger than the last.
You quite rapidly get
to a point where there's nowhere to go.
Where it gets ridiculous, basically.
Yeah.
It's tricky, because you do want, in modern TV, you want some kind of season arc.
Yeah.
Chibnall tried not to do that in his first season. That final episode was terrible. Battle of Rancid Old Koalas, whatever it's called. That was probably about the worst episode of the entire season. It didn't benefit at all from the fact it was... notionally not really connected. It had Tim Shaw in it, but otherwise. Yeah.
But it took me a while to work that out, to be honest, you know, with that last episode. It was only because of the name that I suddenly twigged. Yeah. He was from the first episode, which was like 9 episodes before.
Yeah. So I do feel if RTD is moving on, and there's certainly a chance he is.
But at the moment, on paper, it looks like he's moved on.
Then I hope whoever takes over does do a bit of a clean slate somehow.
Yeah.
It's still continuing on.
Yeah.
It's still in the continuity.
Well, it's a 16th Doctor or 17th Doctor.
Yeah. But start like they did with Eccleston.
Yeah.
This new Doctor, new companion who doesn't know anything.
Yes.
And introduce everyone again.
Yeah, a bit more mystery, maybe even for the Doctor. Or could they just take the BBC footage and just redo the regeneration shot and just fit, you know, have Shooty burst into someone else
I don't like the idea of them just wiping her out. It's happened. I don't like the idea of them just pretending it hasn't.
No,
I like gotta go somewhere with it.
The idea that Adam suggested of just sort of going back and explaining it later on, and rather not starting there and have
start with
standalone
the new Doctor and go along, and then something happens that makes him or her refer back.
I do really want proper sort of 10, 12 episode seasons again. I don't mind an odd Doctor Light one, but a proper season with a nice story arc again.
Yeah.
I like the ones, the individual stories. I like them when there's just a hint of the arc.
Yeah.
When the arc's hammered home every time, I get bored with it and it just annoys me.
And it prevents, you know, casual viewers from enjoying it. But I really enjoyed Capaldi's first season, because you just had hints of Missy at the end of each episode, didn't you? And that built up to her.
That's what I meant by build up. Yes, it was terrifying for the people of Earth, but it didn't end up with galaxy threatening consequences.
It didn't get silly. You had to press a reset button. Yeah, because Steve Moffat had more contained episodes, because those first two Matt Smith seasons were very good, weren't they?
Yeah, despite Gillan.
Yeah, much as I loved Moffat's eras, Matt Smith's first couple of seasons, my favourite era of Doctor Who in total, I don't want him to come back.
Who, Matt Smith?
Matt Smith or Moffat particularly.
New blood.
Yeah, it is time.
Like we're caught on a roundabout at
the
moment.
We are. I think it hasn't served us to go back to RTD. No. Nothing wrong with it. It's that most recent season is actually, on the whole, excellent.
Yes.
But we're just getting too self-referential.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much in that about Omega, a unit in half of the episodes.
This is the trouble. Yeah, it's wonderful doing old monsters every now and again.
Mm-hmm.
But we're now scraping the bottom of the barrel where that is concerned. No disrespect to the characters, but the Rani, you know, she was fairly recent. Omega has only appeared in 2.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah. Well, Celestial Toymaker. And that was a brilliant episode.
That one was brilliant, but that's the thin end of the wedge.
Yeah.
If the story... Don't bring them back for the sake of bringing them back. Bring them back with the story.
And I feel like some of the... peril's gone, because now there's potentially endless regenerations, and it's getting to sort of like in the Colin Baker era, and almost every story they mention regeneration for some reason, and it kind of takes the impact off that your main character can't die.
Yeah.
So maybe leave that alone, have a doctor that will stick around for longer, if possible. Yeah. And also a companion that you could explore more. Because Belinda, as good as she was what she was there, she was let down by some of the stories.
She petered out at the end.
Yeah.
If threatening the doctor's not good enough, we need to start being more brutal to the companions.
Yes.
And none of this, oh, she's going to die. Oh, no, she hasn't. You know, if you're telling me she's going to die, she better die at the end.
Yes. Yes, they have been too lenient on their companions.
Yeah. We need to adrikaze a few people.
Never struck me so bloodthirsty.
After Andor.
There's hidden sides to you.
No, it's not hidden.
See, I'm getting flashbacks.
Can I come home with you, Scott?
Yeah, I'm getting flashbacks of being in Chicago and watching Face the Raven and Karen telling us to stay away from her. Yeah.
You had to. I was so angry. And I said, please stay away from me. I just need to shout at this pillow for a while. And then I was happy again.
But yeah, all that emotional investment in that they could die, all that peril. And then, oh no, they own a TARDIS cafe and they're flying around the universe. And we're never going to tie up that loose end.
Yeah, it's like, ugh. The first time they did it was when they ruined Doomsday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can cope with Amy and Rory's finale because you don't get to see them live their life.
But no, but you know they've lived a long and happy life.
Yeah, and the grief is still the doctor's, so it's quite effective.
I mean, he doesn't know that they died horribly eaten by ants four years apart.
But yeah, you also had Bill's character, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm. Going off, flying around the universe. She had with a girlfriend, Cobble Girl. TARDIS.
Yeah. Some people should just stay dead.
That's it. You're already a Cyberman. Just die.
Yeah. God's sake, woman. Some people are so selfish.
Yeah. But do you think the Doctor Who fans in general would accept, say, an American as a showrunner?
No. Oh, as a showrunner?
As a showrunner.
Yeah.
Yes, I would. I think.
Well, Doctor Who fans in general are dicks.
Yeah.
But the sensible ones, if JMS said, yeah, I'll take the job, no one with half a brain is going to go, oh, no, I don't want him. He's an American.
Yeah.
Particularly given, obviously, the guy who first sparked the idea was Canadian.
He's Canadian.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
He did, but he wasn't British.
And the main thing is you kind of want new blood to the universe now.
That is, as one thing that's been pointed out, it's a machine. It's a gristle mill. You throw in ideas and whatever and you get product out the other end. It constantly needs new stuff.
I think, just to beef it up a bit, they should get Stephen King in as the main writer. Let's have
a finale,
horror.
Stephen.
Oh.
Yeah, why not?
But yeah, definitely for me, more monsters of the week, even if it's rubber suits. Mm-hmm. I just want that buzz of, oh, it's this week, or we got this to look forward to. Lots of new monsters and new writers, actually. I enjoy that the new writers that come on and do their own thing.
Yep.
I would have liked maybe less RTD stories. Not that, you know, particularly series two was weak. He did some really good ones there, but I just like new blood coming in with new story ideas.
Okay, we would love to hear your ideas. What would you like to see happen? Which route would you like to see the show amble down? Write to us via show
at
staggeringstories.net.
In a paddling pool.
I can't splash anymore. The water's dissolved. Dissolved? What's that?
Evaporated.
Plenty of sweat to go around.
Right, we have no feedback, so it's over to our critical analysis in the corner with an octopus on his head.
Indeed.
One, two, three.
For the first time.
Hello, head of Pertwee.
Plus octopi.
Inky McSquirtsalot. Dinky McSquirtsalot.
Folded up and shoved behind an air conditioner, Clara.
Indeed.
Handles.
Dave Zilla the Mighty. Hey,
let me get Terence.
And Terence. Hi, Terence. Various nebulas.
Dangerous Churchill. Nazi Spock. Graham. And, of course, Sandy. And the goats.
And the goats and the Moomin.
And the Moomin.
Oh, boy.
Anybody else? Many more.
So many more. You really need to burn this room down and start again.
It might spontaneous
set up a firing squad.
Yeah. It may ignite of its own accord now.
Yeah. It may do. God, it's hot. And so that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Another sticky podcast.
God, yes. Thank God.
But fear not, next time there will be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that, M for moist.
Comes melting.
Magnificently.
Momentarily.
Covered in mangoes. Towards us. This is me, Fake Heath, saying farewell.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Over the centuries, mankind has tried many ways of combating the forces of evil. Prayer, fasting, good works and so on. Up until doom. No one seemed to have thought about a double-barrel shotgun. Eat leaden death, demon!
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 475, featuring Adam Purcell, Fake Keith, Asda Man, and the real Keith Dunn. The views expressed are those of the speakers and don't necessarily represent those of the other speakers on the site. No copyright infringement is intended. This has been an El Presidente and Fake Keith production for www.staggeringstories.net. Woohoo!
Thank God that's over. Now, for God's sake, someone get me off this leather sofa!
I told you not to sit down naked.
Oh. Back in the water.
Oh, wet t-shirt competition! Wet t-shirt.
Okay, are we ready?
Yes.
We're definitely recording now.
Yes.
Wet.
Karen.
Yes. Oh, God. And your cushion's wet. Yes, dear. Oh, my glasses are wet. Everything's wet.
That's not healthy.
Pack it in.
Sorry.
No air. It's so hot. I can't open the door. Forget it.
It's probably... Hey Google, what's the temperature outside?
The temperature in Crawley right now is 26 degrees.
Hey Google, what's the temperature in the living room?
It's currently 26 degrees and the living room is off.
Hey Google, what's the temperature in the kitchen?
The kitchen is off and it's currently 26.5 degrees.
Not much between it really, is it?
Well, let's launch into the next bit, yeah. And then perhaps we can take a break and whack the conditioning back on for a little while.
Can we have a break?
Yep, it's going to start up. I won't, I don't plug it in.
The I'm reading it, you know, the interrogation between Dedra and Krennic.
Oh, that's nice. That
was an ad lib, apparently.
Yeah.
You can tell by her reaction.
I was going to say, it was the most natural reaction, wasn't it? What the hell's going on? Yeah. You stood in front of my breeze.
My breeze is on its way.
Oh, God, that's lovely and cool.
God, it's going to be hot tonight, isn't it?
Mm.
It is. Yeah.
Windows open. The dog will be sleeping on her cooling mat. You do realise when Ben's with us, as well as having to take the bus to Red Hill and back, we are going to have to watch Stupid Deaths.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good, yeah.
Is that Horrible History?
It is. We like, me and Ben, we like Stupid Deaths. They're rather good.
Stupid deaths.
Stupid deaths.
I bought the box set
because they're true. Oh, did you?
I've got to the first six seasons, I think.
Yeah, first DVD.
Oh, I'm gonna
after that, they change the cast, don't they? So.
Yeah.
Is it the first six seasons, the ghost cast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was sitting
there watching it one day with my nan when she started getting dementia. Mm. She was still independent and everything. There was a scene where he goes, "Oh my God, I think I've killed the king. That's bad, isn't it?" Yes! And it's just, we were both pissing ourselves straight away. I was like, yeah, that's our new programme, Nan. I need to get in the loft to get all these DVDs out. It's sort of walled up with other people's stuff as they've all moved back.
Yes.
There is one problem with that, as we discovered when we were having the roof fixed. If you clear too much out of the loft, the roof caves in because the stuff is holding it up.
I worry about the opposite problem. I hear a creak and most of my stuff's above me and I'm like, that's a temperature thing, right?
Oh, that's cooler. Can't we just talk loud over the top of it?
Probably not, sadly. Really?
Okay.
I'm taking Miss Tutor to shut up.
I want it to make that ever so cute noise again. It was like it was disappointed in being turned off.
It sounded a bit like that farting hippo on YouTube.
Really?
Where it gets the main grunt out, and then right at the end there's a... Not recording that, are you?
Yes.
Ah, there you are. Here it is.